Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of a Tuesday edition of the Mark Bearden Show. Another reminder, it is election day. Get out and vote if you can. And if you're in St. Louis County and you're not happy with the leadership, I'll be honest with you, I don't know what kind of executive Mark Montavani would be, but I do think that he would not be as crazy on some of these issues like Jake Zimmerman or Sam Page. So you can, for those of you who have never done this before, if you're a Republican voter, you know, you have to pick a ballot in a primary. You don't have to do that in the general. All the candidates are on there. But right now we're deciding who is going to run for the primary. In St. Louis County, it's kind of settled. Now, there probably is going to be a Republican winner, maybe Paul Barry or someone like that. And I like Paul. But the reality of the situation with politics in St. Louis County is a Republican who is not well-known ain't going to win. Even one who is well-known, like Rick Stream, who tried this, you know, a while back, can't remember what year it was, it didn't work. He came very, very close. So you can actually go to your polling place and you can pick a Democrat or Republican ballot. And if you vote on the Democratic primary, you can pick Sam Page or Montavani or Jake Zimmerman. Pick who you want. Always forget that other candidate. There's a bunch on there, but you can just do that and vote on that in Medicaid. You don't have to vote for anyone else. I know some of you want to vote for different candidates. If that's the case, pull the R ballot. But there are options here this afternoon. So my producer, who's in for Dave today, Mike Anderson, sent me this video. I'm always skeptical about everything. And I saw this explosion in Beirut. And at first I thought, there's no way this is even real. And he said, did you watch the middle of it? So I backed it up and I rewatched it. And I didn't even see the real stunning part, I thought. And I follow Greg Favor on Twitter. And we had him on recently to talk about some things that were related to St. Louis, but I wanted to get him on here, and that was when he was having lunch or dinner with the former governor a couple of weeks ago, and there was a shooting. But Greg is with us this afternoon, former St. Louis fire captain, also the executive director of the St. Louis Area Regional Response System. You have a fair amount of experience with explosions, and you were breaking this down in a very unique way. First of all, Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thanks for the opportunity to come back.
I mean, there's probably a fair number of people this afternoon that haven't seen this video, but I've put it this way. There's an explosion, and then there's whatever you would call it, a second wave, and it looks like it's an atomic bomb that's hitting Beirut.
Yeah, it's a really incredible video, and I between stuff we've done in public safety, training for bombing incidents, working on bomb and arson investigations, and seeing different things in the military – this has got to be one of the largest explosions we've seen in an urban area in quite some time. The video is absolutely ridiculous, and you can tell a lot. You know, when firefighters look at smoke, you can actually tell a lot of what's happening by the color and the intensity of smoke. And what we saw in the overpressurization wave, which is what you're talking about, that kind of looks like almost like an atomic mushroom cloud. That rapid overpressurization, it can happen with non-atomic material, non-nuclear material, but you don't see it all that often because of the amount of intensity and energy that's required to generate something like that. It's really an incredible. I've been on the phone with a couple of Navy EOD guys, Navy bomb guys this afternoon, and all of us are just aghast at what we're seeing. It's just a really incredible event to see happen in an urban area.
Greg, you called that You call that like a pressure wave or a blast wave. In one of the tweets, you said they can literally travel at the speed of sound. I mean, that thing comes through very, very quickly. The one thing that's been kind of amazing at this point, we haven't had, I mean, the casualty numbers are starting to come in, at least 50 dead. But you think, I mean, it would be hard for me to believe that that blast wave isn't going to have a significant effect on the death toll and also just structures in whatever that square mile area would be.
Absolutely. And that's in talking with other responders who kind of work in this area, one thing that we're deeply concerned about is the secondary and the tertiary effects. Both other explosions, building collapses, the impact on hospitals. I've read two unconfirmed reports that say three hospitals in the Beirut area have been completely destroyed. So that's all gonna add to the human suffering side of this, and scene stabilization is just it's gonna take days to get any sort of real count. And the intensity at the epicenter, we will probably never know the true amount of people killed by this, because as we've seen in Kansas City and a few other places, if you're right up close to an explosion like that, I mean, you can get vaporized. I mean, it's so intense if you're up close that they just may not find you.
Based on what I saw visually, I can believe that. I think we have, Mike, let's play a little of the sound here. I think we have this on audio right now. And Greg, there's been some talk of a fireworks plant or something like that. Do we know anything more about, is there a possibility, because when this first happened, people were saying missiles and all these things. Is there another explanation here, or is it what basically we see, some sort of terrible explosion and maybe a fireworks plant or something along those lines?
So without question, every intelligence service in the world right now is trying to piece together exactly what happened to figure out if it was accidental or malicious. I can tell, I mean, I've been watching, different angles for the last few hours, and I certainly haven't seen anything extraordinarily unique that would point to a weapon system or anything like that. I can say that we've had events like this in ports in the United States. We had one in Galveston in Texas where the same thing, a ship pulled in, there was a shipboard fire, it mixed with some things, and it killed like 600 people in Galveston, Texas, back in 1947. So there's certainly precedent for this to be an accidental or man-made event without the missiles and stuff like that. But I guarantee you that every intelligence service across the world is feverishly talking to people trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
Yeah, it's crazy. I hope we find out more information, but that was a stunner when that video came across this afternoon, as I mentioned at the beginning. I mean, honestly, just because you can't, I think it's good to be skeptical, Greg. You would probably agree with that. It didn't even look real. That's how crazy that video was. And you can check out Greg's, give your Twitter handle out for people who want to follow you and get some of this insight.
Sure. It's at Greg, G-R-E-G-G, Favor, F-A-V-R-E.
You always laugh about that, man, but you got the check mark. You're follow worthy, Greg Favor. Don't be shy about that, and I appreciate you coming on here this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Talk soon.
Okay. Take care. It is 3:13. Let's see what I have time for before I get into the other segment. I don't think I have any more time. And I'm going to talk about some other things here, but there was really, I might save this for tomorrow. There was another member of the mainstream media. It was a reporter for MSNBC who wrote a piece very similar to what we've seen when it comes to some of the other folks that have quit in journalism, including that column that was in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago. So it illustrates, by example, some things that happen in bias in the media. And Barry Weiss is the woman who resigned last month. There's been a couple other things like it. So we'll save that for tomorrow, unless I have time later this hour. We do have an audio cut of the day. We're going to talk about SpaceX coming up next. Those guys, the astronauts, including Bob Behnken, who is from here in the St. Louis area, already back on the ground. What did we learn? And how did we miss the last couple of months? Because it seemed to happen very quickly. Mac Bradley coming up next on KMOX.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
So I was heading back from the airport late Sunday night, and I tuned into KMOX, and I heard this report, because I had no idea that these guys, Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley, were already back on Earth, but it happened. Gulf of Mexico.
Splashdown.
As you can see on your screen, we have visual confirmation for Splashdown.
SpaceX copies and concurs. We see Splashdown and Mains Cut.
Dragon Endeavor has returned home. NASA astronauts
and
Bob
Endeavor,
and Doug.
On behalf of the SpaceX and NASA teams, welcome back to planet Earth, and thanks for flying SpaceX.
I love it. So Mac Bradley is a guy that you're probably familiar with. We have him on when we talk about Mardi Gras because he runs Mardi Gras Inc., but he's also an author and an expert on international space policy. And one of the greatest things about this story, Mac, as I'm sure you know, they're basically in a spaceship bobbling around, and they were making prank satellite phone calls to whoever they could get a hold of, which astronaut Hurley says that was kind of fun. And they're not joking. They were just kind of having fun with it. And you sort of sensed it from Bob Behnken and Hurley kind of going into this whole mission. They were lighthearted guys who had a big sense of humor.
They were determined to have some fun with this, which I think is really cool, without, you know, losing their sense of focus on what is inherently a very dangerous profession. So they were able to thread the needle. It's pretty neat.
So there was somebody that tweeted, somebody that got a call. I received one of these calls at the flight director console. It started with an opening line like, "Hi, it's Doug and Bob, and we're in the ocean." I think my response was, "Yeah, I can see that." So that is awesome. But, you know, the thing that really struck me, Mac, was we haven't, and I think it's obvious why. There's been so much other stuff going on, but everyone was into this. I was excited about it. We talked about it for many days. But I feel like I haven't heard anything about this mission in the last 2 months.
Right. Right. And, of course, you know, in the last 2 months, they've traveled about 24 million miles in that time. You know, they contributed, I think it was more than 100 hours to the scientific experiments going on the space station. And then with their landing, I mean, this is a really successful test flight. I think a lot, it's easy to forget. This is an experimental spacecraft, never been flown by humans before. So getting up there to the space station, that's half the job, right? But then you have to come back home.
Back.
And the heat shield
right.
has to work. Everything's got to work. And it appears as though it all worked.
The last time that we had a splashdown in this country, I probably watched it as a 10-year-old. It was 45 years ago.
Yeah, 1975, right.
So a lot of people who...
Soyuz was the last time we did it.
And a lot of people, I guess, you know, a good portion generationally of people who really don't remember the space program probably had no idea maybe that that's how we got some of these guys. Well, I guess everybody back home, right?
Right, yeah, that's right. And, of course, this time, one of the things that was a little different back then, you know, they would send out an aircraft carrier to go get these guys. Now, of course, there's a special-made recovery craft that's, you know, built just for this job that SpaceX has that went out and got them. And they were also able to avoid the hurricane, so they got that going for them, too.
So what was the big is there a big takeaway at this point, or do we have to wait for some of that just because of the science and the experiments?
Yeah, it'll be about 6 weeks. What will happen after this? And again, look, you know, neither one of us works at NASA, so we know what the public sees. It certainly appears as though this was a wildly successful test flight. NASA will spend probably the next 6 weeks or so certifying this spacecraft for flight. If that happens as expected, then there will be a first operational mission of the Crew Dragon spacecraft probably before the end of September with four astronauts that will go up to the space station. And that'll be the first operational flight. So that'll be the next milestone. And, you know, going forward, a lot of people expected we'll stop buying seats to the space station from the Russians, which we've been doing at about $90 million a seat. The SpaceX version of that is cheaper at about $55 million a seat. But we will have an American astronaut go up on a Russian Soyuz later this year. And I don't think that'll be the end of us getting a ride from the Russians. But we'll be doing a lot more of it on American spacecraft from American soil. This is the first one, Mark. The second one is the spacecraft that's being built by Boeing called Starliner, and it's scheduled to make its second uncrewed flight to the station later this year.
Awesome. And then outside of prank phone calls, what's next for Bob and Doug?
Boy, I mean, how can you top this? I don't know.
Right.
They're gonna have to figure out what to do next. I mean, they'll still. I imagine they will still be in the crew rotation for the operational versions of this flight. The station has a lot more. Space station's got a lot of life left in it. So I imagine they'll be going up there, and they may also be on the short list for Moon and Mars.
I think that's pretty cool. Everything turned out well. It's pretty exciting. Yeah. Bob Behnke and Doug Hurley back on the ground. Mac Bradley, always helping us out with these space issues. I appreciate it, Mac. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
3:24. I think I have some time to get into this piece about this woman who quit MSNBC, because I think it's consistent with some of the messaging right now with the media. And I even praise this guy from Axios. I'm sure the guy Jonathan Swan from Axios isn't exactly a conservative, but I give him credit because we'll have to match it up against the Biden interview. But I think he did ask fair but tough questions of the president. So here's more along the lines. This is Ariana Pecori, MSNBC producer, along the lines of what we saw from Barry Weiss and some others, Andrew Sullivan as well, as he left New York Magazine in mid-July. So this is what Ariana writes. She says, "Just quit. That's the advice Alec gave a year and a half ago when I expressed concerns about my job. You just quit. It's that simple. Stay at MSNBC at least until the midterms," Jeffrey said a couple of years back. He advised to watch and see what happens. "Hang in there. You're needed," Elizabeth recommended last winter. "I was in your shoes when I was younger, but I stuck it out. A year and a half ago, simply quitting my job without knowing my next step sounded pretty radical, so I stuck it out a bit longer until we were in the middle of a pandemic to make a truly radical move. July 24th was my last day at MSNBC. I don't know what I'm going to do next exactly, but I simply couldn't stay there anymore. My colleagues are very smart people with good intentions. The problem is the job itself. It forces skilled journalists..." It's an interesting term there, because we don't have a lot of those these days. I'm going to, for the sake of argument, assume that she was one of those, just because she recognizes the difference between maybe skilled and unskilled. But she says it forces skilled journalists to make bad decisions on a daily basis. "You may not watch MSNBC. I don't. But just know that this problem still affects you." This is where it gets important. And this is why this type of column, Barry Weiss's column, are very important. "All the commercial networks function the same, and no doubt that content seeps into your social media feed one way or the other. It's possible that I'm more sensitive to the editorial process due to my background in public radio, where no decision I ever witnessed was predicated on how a topic or guest would rate." By the way, that's how it used to be in really, I think that's the way it is at KMOX. I know it is that way at KMOX right now, but it used to be that way in all of the news business. And I've worked in television and radio news over the course of 30 years. She says, "The longer I was at MSNBC, the more I saw such choices. It's practically baked into the editorial process, and those decisions affect news content daily. Likewise, it's taboo to discuss how the rating scheme distorts content, or it's simply taken for granted because everyone in the commercial broadcast news industry is doing exactly the same thing. But behind closed doors, industry leaders will admit the damage that's being done. We're a cancer and there is no cure," a successful and insightful TV veteran said to me. "But if you could find a cure, it would change the world. As it is, this cancer stokes national division, even in the middle of a civil rights crisis." She's right about that. Think about the Bubba Wallace story. Think about some of the other stories out there. "The model blocks diversity of thought and content because the networks have incentive to amplify fringe voices." This is Fox too, by the way. Okay? "And events, and at the expense of others, all because it pumps up the ratings. This cancer risks human lives, even in the middle of a pandemic. The primary focus quickly became what Donald Trump was doing poorly to address the crisis, rather than the science itself. As new details have become available about antibodies, a vaccine, or how COVID actually spreads, producers still want to focus on the politics. Important facts or studies get buried." I mean, let's offer a local example here. Outside of the pandemic, 52 people, I'd have to check on the numbers. I mean, once you get over 50, were murdered in St. Louis in the month of July. That's been a mention. You know, we had 32 in June. No big deal. We're okay. The agenda-driven St. Louis Post-Dispatch knows that that does not play to their narrative. People being killed. Cops shooting people. That plays to the narrative. That's going to get headline after headline after headline. Stoking racial divisions. People being shot. Black lives being snuffed out. Black children. That's not good for the newspaper business. We can't do that. Right? Context and factual data are often considered too cumbersome for the audience, she writes. There may be some truth to that, but another hard truth is that it's the job of journalists to teach and inform, which means they might need to figure out a better way to do that. They could contemplate more creative methods for captivating an audience. You know, here's a creative method. I've suggested this for years. I'm not the only one. How about taking the New York Times desk and moving it to Poplar Bluff, Missouri, or someplace like that? How about CNN taking them? No, they do it during the elections for a town hall, but who cares? Let's talk to the rest of the country. Find out why people in some parts of the country don't like wearing masks. And is it just because they're crazy? Because I don't think it is. In all, and there's crazy people out there, like the chick at the fast food place yesterday. Now, she goes on here and goes on and on about how journalism needs to change. And she says, I think the job itself needs to change. There's a better way to do this. I'm not so cynical to think that we're absolutely doomed. I think that they are because of the money. I mean, they can't see. Here's the trade-off. They can't have a network if they're not making money. They can't make as much money if they're doing real journalism. It's a struggle for a lot of people. There's a balance that has to be put into play. The balance is off kilter right now. I'll be honest with you. Over the years, you have to, and I used to be in a position where you make decisions about news content. Now, I never did that based on someone buying commercials. We don't do that at KMOX, but you do have to sometimes be sensitive to the business at hand. And what's happened, I think, in journalism outside of our newsroom, and I think that local television stations, I would say the same thing about, but they can't do the in-depth reporting. I think that what's happened is the balance is so off kilter with the television networks, Fox included, that the priority is just the making of the money. And it has to be, because otherwise you don't have people that are going to work on your station, but that causes more problems in the country. It's worth a read. I'll put it on the Mark Reardon Show Facebook page if you want to check it out.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Well, look, I think I've been clear, but I have a lot of idiot friends. I'm an idiot. One of my idiot friends, first thing I see yesterday morning, I was sleeping in because I got back late. Welcome back, St. Louis Battle Hawks. Blank, yes. Let's play a little Battle Hawks here.
Winged warriors. Preparing for flight. Preparing to fight. They await their orders. Then attack as one.
Yes, yes. And they attacked quite well here in St. Louis. We found out that the XFL is being bought for $15 million by a group headed by The Rock. We can't call him The Rock anymore, Dwayne Johnson. So we thought we'd get Kurt Hunziker on the phone. Had many conversations with him in the the start of the season, during the season. Kurt, how are you?
Mark, doing well. Thank you for having me.
You are the former president of the St. Louis Battlehawks, so where does news like this actually leave you? Is there a place that this leaves you or not?
I'm optimistic that professional football will return to St. Louis. There's still a lot to be done
Yeah.
before the sale is finalized, but it's you know, the dominoes need to fall, and this is your first one, having a qualified bid that seemingly Alpha Entertainment would accept.
Yeah, maybe kind of run down who's involved here and what the kind of what the logistics would be to getting this thing going again, if it is a possibility.
Well, I know as much as you do. So as my last day was on the 10th of April, like everybody else is. And so I've been following along fairly closely, but with the bankruptcy court, things are pretty close to the vest. But it appears that Dwayne Johnson, Danny Garcia, and Redbird Capital are looking to invest in the XFL. And I think given the resources and the expertise that they can provide, and I put a huge amount of weight on their production capabilities of not just the gameplay, but making the XFL or whatever they want to call it, whether that stays the name or not, I have no idea. You know, making that a 365-day brand instead of just, you know, 2.5 months, or if you really want to get small, the 10-game regular season. That's where I think this gets to be really, really interesting.
Well, I mean, I can see why Dwayne Johnson and other investors might want to take a shot at this, because in reality, especially to some of these guys, $15 million is not a big investment for the potential payoff here with the way the league was going, you know, before everything got shut down. Don't you agree?
I do. I do very much so. And I think the price is likely depressed because of the pandemic. But the
sure.
XFL, even before the pandemic, the XFL was really built to be watched on TV. Like, we took great strides in creating a very different broadcast experience for fans, you know, getting them greater access, kind of, you know, peek behind the curtain, so to speak. I mean, that was big for us. And
yes.
You know, we made adjustments as the season went on for the 5 weeks that we did play. But it was really eye-opening. I even saw Danny Garcia talking about it yesterday. You know, it just felt different. It was a lot more about the players, and you just felt just a little bit more of the energy, and that was really by design. Now, the eight of us that ran the teams in market, you know, obviously we had all these other layers attached to it to get fans into the stadiums. But, you know, the focal point was always about the football, having quality football that was very entertaining to watch. I'd like to think that We succeeded even in the short amount of time that we had.
Well, I know you succeeded. I think you know that. And, you know, I still think it's one of those, I think I told you this at the time, one of those situations that should really be taught in marketing classes at high schools and universities, because there was so much momentum. And a lot of that was some of the anger that was pointed at Stan Kroenke, but that sort of helped get things pushed in a different direction for the franchise here. So, look, I hope it could come back. Just based on what we saw here in St. Louis, a lot of people outside of my idiot friend Chris, and he's not an idiot because he liked the XFL. I just want to be clear, he's an idiot just overall, and he appreciates me saying that. But I know there was a lot of excitement. And, you know, the one thing that I was thinking about, you kind of filled in the blank here, Kurt. It is custom to television, even if you would want to get fans in there as soon as possible. But if you had a situation where maybe you get started next year without fans, that's completely executable in an entertaining way.
I agree with you, and I like to think that the Battle Hawks provided a very nice game plan for whatever the new normal may be when fans are back in being able to go to the Dome and stadiums and arenas across the country, of the way we went about building this team. And you're right. I mean, there was, you know, a fair amount of animosity about how the previous team left, but what we really focused in on was tapping into, you know, the civic pride, the love people have for St. Louis City and the region, and, you know, wanting to support and help build the first homegrown pro football team. And that really helped us change the tonality to being way more positive and fun. And that's where the caw and all the great things that just organically grew. That's the part I'm very excited about, hopefully bringing back to St. Louis.
And that's the part that some of us missed. Yeah, that, because I did not see that organically happening, and it was pretty cool to see it. So thanks for coming on, Kurt. I know that you're probably hopeful and watching this from afar like a lot of us, and I hope that we can start talking about this, because it just got off to, you know, it's like many other things. You get off to a great start, and then boom, it's over. Just the, you know, the bad luck that we had, but this obviously the whole world is experiencing that right now. So keep us posted, okay?
Will do, Mark. Thank you so much for having me today.
Take care. I mean, that's kind of encouraging news when you think about it. And here's what I would say. I mean, my friend who was texting me yesterday, I'll give him a little trouble, but he was early in on Chris was on the XFL, and he was very genuinely excited about it. I did not go to a game. I didn't get to go to a game because I was actually out of town during one of the weekends of the home game, and then the whole thing just fell apart. But if I'm Dwayne Johnson and I make $20 million a movie, which is really just my spending money because he gets so much from producing, my guess would be, you know, just executive producing some of the things he's invested in, even whatever merchandising is probably ample money to fill the coffers. And then this thing is available for $15 million. Not only are you a football fan and a player like The Rock, you know, he played at Miami, passionate about the sport. He turned his television show Ballers into an effort to buy the NFL. I mean, this is actually a storyline from the show Ballers, which was on HBO, but in that case, he bought the NFL. And maybe he's just trying to extend the storyline for the show. But I said to Chris, I said, if you're going to tell me that this thing was only $15 million, I could have put a group together to buy it because it's not a lot of money, realistically. And there's potential there. So we'll see. Kind of keep hopes up for fans of the XFL. If I'm being completely honest, I never totally got into it, but I never went and saw a game, you know, in person. And I think it was getting better as the weeks went by. So we'll keep you posted on that. 3:46, we have a break to take here. We'll get you updated with traffic and weather together in just a couple of minutes. Then we have audio cut of the day. John Rooney at 4:20 with the latest on the Cardinals. Chris Raby at 4:15.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Audio cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store this afternoon. Pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. If you haven't seen the video, it is stunning. Big explosion in Beirut. At least 50 people killed, and it looked like an atomic bomb. I'm not exaggerating. This is CNN's Ben Wiedemann, who is far away from the blast site, but still describes it.
Well, it's just after 6 p.m. in the evening local time, about 5 hours ago, when I felt what I thought was an earthquake. This is an earthquake zone. But just moments later, the windows in our bureau and the window frames were just knocked out by the blast. The office is in shambles, but we were relatively lucky. Our cameraman was slightly injured when the blast blew him off his scooter, but we understand from the Lebanese health minister that at least 50 people were killed and more than 2,750 wounded. And this is just initial reports. I spoke to someone who's in a neighborhood near the port who said that buildings have collapsed, that the neighborhoods are unrecognizable, that in the immediate aftermath of the blast, there were wounded people lying all over the streets, that shortly afterwards, people were trying to provide first aid to some, providing CPR to others. The hospitals are overwhelmed. We spoke to somebody at one of the main hospitals here who said that they were treating at least 400 injuries. And the Lebanese Red Cross, for example, has called on all its ambulances in the entire country to rush to Beirut as soon as possible. As far as the cause of this blast, as you mentioned initially, the official news agency said it was a warehouse full of fireworks. But now it appears that there was some sort of confiscated high explosives which in that warehouse, which might explain the size of that massive blast.
I mean, when you see the video, it is stunning. Go to my Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX or KMOX.com. That's your audio cut of the day. Total Information PM is coming up.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.